before, it's that frog in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, and the water's been getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9. Here in studio today for a special school budget conversation with current school committee chair Dave Callahan. Dave, how are you doing this Monday?
I'm doing fantastic, Steve.
And former school committee chair Ann Bergen, Dr. Ann Bergen, actually.
Yes, and I'm just so happy to be here, and thank you for having me and allowing me to take part in this conversation, because I like to be able to pontificate and talk about a lot of stuff, so it's what I do.
I guess I thank you, yes, so much. We're really, there's a lot of stuff going on at the schools and across the community.
Absolutely.
Right now. And what better way than to kind of get a couple of chairs in the room.
Absolutely.
to talk about school committee, you know, today in school committee.
And the other thing too, I think that's so important, and I know Dave well enough to this, is that we're both fierce public school advocates, sort of mm-hmm. as the foundation of democracy, and we are fighters, you know, along with the people we work with, to preserve public schools and to keep them strong. So anyway,
right.
I'll be quiet at this point.
No, that's okay, because, at this point, clearly for the listeners, buckle in, fasten the seatbelt. We're going to be on a good ride. This is going to be a civil conversation and sharing some information, clearly factual and accurate, because it's coming right from the sources in this case. And a little backstory, in case you haven't heard, the town budget is out. School committee put forward what they want. Town administration has not fully funded that. So there's a joint meeting of the school committee town council coming on April 24th for community input. Following that, town council at their May 1st meeting, from what we understand, will then make a decision on yes or no, there will be an override. And if yes, the date. And the date certainly is being debated in terms of a June versus November time period, and then the amount. And there's all kinds of talk out there, so we'll put that aside for the moment. Let's just, before we get into the rest of the schedule, if the budget override were to be in November, that would be a real challenge for the schools, as I understand it. Can you explain that a little bit?
I'd like to speak to that one, because that's so more current, and to be able to speak to that issue around that. So why don't you go ahead with that one?
What's happening right now is, we have about like a $6.3 million shortfall mm-hmm. from what we've requested and what the town administrator has in his budget book and his recommended allocation. And so it's $6.3 million worth of cuts that would have to be made really moving forward. And so, and this is something that I'm sure by the time this comes out, even more presentations will be out there, but definitely on that Wednesday meeting when Lucas does his presentations, I'm gonna be talking about the positions that would have to be let go, the fees that would have to be raised mm-hmm. in order to start to bridge that gap. One of the things that we came out with this budget book that we kind of fought and worked hard on was to kind of talk about, when you look at, say, like riding the bus, how much of that is, right now each family pays about $360 per student, how much of that actually kind of, covers the total cost of
right.
the bus? It's about a third. Mm-hmm. And the school's operating budget picks up the other two-thirds.
Right.
Maybe something like that, we're going to have to start to shift that balance mm-hmm. so that way families are going to have to pay even more of their obligations.
Closer to maybe a 50-50, which in some cases still would be, not good numbers for some pocketbooks, which we understand.
So. Exactly. And I think, too, I know we've talked about this before, and everybody in this room knows about it, too, but when we look at this budget that we've kind of put forward, the superintendent's budget, it's a level service plus. It kind of claws back some of the middle school clubs, a couple other activities and positions that were lost in last year's budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, that's it. It just right. takes what we have today and just does a copy and paste and puts it in for tomorrow. It's not this big, expansive budget. And so, yeah. It went up by 12.9%. But it's largely due to a lot of to inflation, to a lot of cost drivers well outside of, unfortunately, our control.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just to kind of provide effectively the same service and quality of education that we're providing today, tomorrow.
And on the inflation factor, we all see it on a daily basis where no matter we turn, something is, wait a minute, that's a different price than I paid last time. And effectively, you from a budget position, you did services, everybody got that. Granted, middle school, clearly we heard from them. Middle school families were upset because of the clubs, et cetera, activities were taken away. But even providing last year's services with this year's dollars, you're not getting the same reach that you got last year. Hence the increase in order to provide that same level service as opposed to level funded budget, which the dollars would be the same, but they're not the same.
So I'm wondering if there's a point here, if I can go back just because of who I am and being older. And
give us a little bit more of that historical perspective so we can put it in context.
I think that would be very helpful because I think especially newer families to the community, maybe not aware of the history. So just going back to 1980 when Proposition 2.5 was first instituted, Franklin had already one of the lowest tax rates in the entire state of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
We have been stuck there ever since.
Right.
And the other piece to it is that the state has said loud and clear to us, you are now a wealthier community. You can tax yourselves more. Do not rely on us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same formula that's applied to every other town in Massachusetts. And they're saying to Franklin, hey, we're comparing you to every other town.
Mm-hmm.
We are not going to give you the funding that we once did. You can afford to do this. And then
So let's hold on that one point, because I think that one's key from my perspective.
Yeah.
So Student Opportunity Act revised the original ed reform,
mm-hmm.
which brought Prop 2.5 in.
Right.
Prop 2.5 certainly in that day and time met a need. Certainly there was a whole lot of anti-tax. That's fine. It provided at least a level playing field. But from Franklin's perspective, at least my understanding coming here, the state was giving us the money and there was no penalty. So let's continue to take it as opposed to the intent was that they would give us the money and then we would gradually cover on our own at our own pace, but then get there at some point. That never happened. So Student Opportunity Act finally got redone, and to our legislators' credit, they kept us held harmless.
Right.
So it's what, 10, 11, 12 million?
$11 million held harmless.
Held harmless, which also means we're not getting anything else until our percent gradually gets back to, I think it's what, 82 from what they said, right? So there's meat in this particular one that there wasn't last time.
That's right.
Right. So that kind of historical perspective, we're still going to be facing it over the next several years.
That's exactly right. And then people in every town, the school's budget takes up. So people, when they see the number, they say, well, they must be. Look at the money they're spending on schools. We are spending so much less than virtually, 80% of the other communities in Massachusetts. And look what we have been able to do. But for me, and this is the historical, and then I'll be quiet, the gut-wrenching part, the agony for me as someone who has watched us rise to be one of the strongest school systems in Massachusetts and attract families moving here, and watched the gradual descent into mediocrity. And that's what scares me. And I can just give a slow, because, and we've talked about it, I've heard Dave say this, but the sky's not falling. The schools are going to open, but watch what's happened. The first year, the entire general music program at the middle school, gone. Next year, okay, that, school's open, sky didn't fall, okay, that's gone. Next year, French and Latin, that's gone. Okay, sky's not falling, everyone's not noticing that, okay, going down. Next year, just to be able so we can maintain, because the cost of everything is rising and we're stuck, okay. So in order to maintain and being as creative as we possibly can, next year, all of the librarians, They're all gone. Okay. Next year, kindergarten aides. Okay. Sky's not falling. Schools are opening. All right. Okay, then we start putting fees on for families that mm-hmm. their kids have to pay to ride buses to a public school. Then they have to pay for sports mm-hmm. and after-school activities. Okay. Then we start having to cut back health and phys ed. And what happens, and we know what happens when we lose health education for our kids. All right. And this is for me, and I'm not, and I was mentioning this to Dave before we came on air here, is I'm not a big fan of test scores or anything like that. But we, at one time, when we had the funding that we needed to support our schools, mm-hmm. we had the highest test scores. We were always in the top 10. It's gone.
Yep.
It's gone. We have slipped, we are slipping into mediocrity. And people who care about this community, people who care about this community don't want that to happen because they know and they've seen towns. When you stop investing in your schools, what happens to our community? Property values. We are the ones that draw people here. Mm-hmm. So we're pleading, Dave and I and people like us are saying, please don't be short-sighted. Don't get angry at us because we see that if we want to keep teachers here, we're going to have to have competitive salaries. Don't get mad at us that we want teachers to stay here. And anyone who questions that, what's the cost of replacing a teacher or principal who leaves? That's so short-sighted. Economics 101. So anyone who has seen where we were, which was me, mm-hmm. and where we are now, and the teachers are killing themselves, when anyone who does not realize retooling for the 21st century and the kind of curriculum that we need to be competitive in Franklin,
right.
you know, in terms of just technology, AI, all of that,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm going to say this because I've heard people say, you people are exaggerating about mental health issues in the schools. Please, please, you know, if that's your reason for not voting to invest more in the schools, please, you know, come and talk to people who realize the emotional, behavioral, the mental health issues. This is across the country. This isn't unique
mm-hmm.
to Franklin.
No.
The toll that that's taking on our schools because 20 years ago, what happened in our community? The town got rid of its social services layer of funding. Where do all the mental health and behavioral issues end up in our schools? Who's on the front line?
Mm-hmm.
It's the teachers and anyone who doesn't have any idea of how much energy it takes, particularly with administrative help, in order to maintain and to support the mental health and emotional needs of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So please, I think we have to really address some of this misinformation that's out there. And just people, I respect when people say no, that, you know, that they don't want to vote for, but make sure you're voting against it for the right reasons and that you have the information, right?
Right.
That's my thing, is
sure.
just, is and that's it. So I, you know,
yeah.
I think I've said it.
Well, I think there's a few points there we can elaborate on to help reinforce the point to make sure, because clearly there will be some objectives. Affordability is a key one. There may be folks out there simply who cannot afford it, and I totally appreciate and understand that. But to your point as well, I've been doing this for the 17, 18 years because I could see that happening, that when my daughters graduated in 2004, 2006, the kids aren't getting what they got.
They are. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. It's a whole different world. And I'm with you because my yep. daughter had all the benefits of that. And that's why I'm fighting like heck, and you are too, because
mm-hmm.
we know what our kids had. And we have an obligation for the next group coming to say, we can't let them that happen.
Right.
We know, Steve. We,
sure.
right? We
yeah.
know what it was
yeah.
like.
Because in the list that you mentioned, you know, school trips. Used
that's
to be funded by the schools.
They were. We funded all
now
of them.
Now the PCCs have to do all that fundraising.
That's a very good point. I forgot about that.
If they have a trip. Right?
Yeah.
And in some cases, there's not a whole lot of trips going on because being what it is,
that's,
I mean, it's more work. On the parents, and they already have a busy enough schedule as it
yeah.
is.
And it's something I guess I appreciate just as a data too, with kids in the school system right now, appreciate that it's all about, you know, you had that opportunity, your kids had that success,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to continue that for the next generation, for
sure.
for my kids, you know, generation, and I'm hoping to, you know, be able to do that exact same thing, kind of keep
right.
bringing that forward for the next generation. And what ends up happening with a lot of the, you know, Dr. Bergen had like so many great
pieces of those items that had been cut from over the years. And one of the things, you know, well, we've often talked about, like, the world languages.
Sure.
And because one of the things that's it's so disheartening is that once it's cut, it's gone.
It's hard.
And to and half the time, it just disappears. And because what happens is once your kids kind of go and they finish the schools, mm-hmm. maybe you're not always thinking about, well, they had this opportunity. What are the kids not having now? So, and then for my kiddos, we come in and all those activities, that's never been something on me and my wife's radar.
Of course.
Because it's been gone for so long.
But those of us who saw it, like, that's why Steve's emotional and I'm emotional, is because we know how good it was. And there was such pride.
Right.
And then to see it, and then to hear people, so much misinformation and not getting it, you know, right. It just, that's, yeah.
Well, it's hard to put it in truly in the perspective because the schools and the district and the teachers inside supporting the classroom are still doing a marvelous job.
That's it.
DECA still has awards. The sports still have awards.
Sky is
falling. You can do it around, but to your point, the test scores, you know, when the top 50 schools come out, we're no longer in that top 50.
And we were always there. We always were. I tried not to be, you know, prideful about, you know, to say, but look at us, you know, because it's more than test scores, but it was really good to see that we were up there academically and competing with all. But you know what? The other point I think we really need to make, too, is because I think sometimes, particularly older people, they think back to their time in school and what it was like. But think about it now, and I was looking at my old school pictures back, and it was, you know, they were black and white. But did I ever see a child in a wheelchair in my class picture?
Right.
Did I ever see a seeing eye dog in my class? No, they were all housed in institutions, developmentally stunted. And look at the beauty of public schools. We educate everyone. And the complexities now, the health issues, particularly, you know, when you have this with premature births and things like that, there are a lot of young people, kids that are coming in, and there are all kinds of complications. We teach with pride, with love, every single kid. They, you know, private schools, they skim off the best of the public schools, and they say they're great. They don't. The beauty is we educate everybody. That's the beauty of it. But then, when we do have to, unfortunately, we have to, you know, we can't educate them here, and we have to send them to an out-of-district placement, they don't keep their tuition rates to 2.5, you know. So we have to adjust all of that, right, you know.
Yeah. It was just the last year that it was 14% increase.
Right.
Just, granted, inflation was all over the place, you know, in the past couple of years, but 14%.
That's a good
was
point, Dave. Yeah.
Absolutely unheard of. But the fact that and I know we've talked about this, the beauty of a lot of the programs that we have, that it provides some significant cash savings, but there's also that qualitative aspect where these parents who had, you know, like children that were born with one condition that all of a sudden their kids are getting invited to birthday parties.
That's it. The
and they're, right? They're living in the same neighborhood. They're making friends with the same group of kids that were able to provide these opportunities where, to your point, in past generations, wouldn't have been. They would have lived there, but they never would have been
that's right,
a part of the community.
But think about, for the typically developing kids, what they learn, you know, when kids from all walks of life sit down together, you talk about important lessons in life, you know, that is it. Rather than everyone being exactly the same, it's this, just for 5 minutes watching a Best Buddies interaction, you know, with the Unified Arts teams, you say, are you kidding me? This is public school. This is public school at its best, and we're not going to we're going to fight. And if we go down, we're going to go down. But we're going to fight because it's worth saving. Right, Dave?
Absolutely.
Are you with me, buddy?
I'm with you. Hoping we don't go down, but I'm right there with you.
So we can use this point, I think, to reinforce one of the other things. One of the other things that's been out there, I think, is truly the misinformed, although on the one hand, I'll also say, well, respectfully, the school committee hasn't done as well as they could have communicating. So
point taken.
I'll help you to do that. Mm-hmm. But on the special ed program specifically, you at least now in the last year and a half, and specifically with this particular report and budget request, have better enumerated the savings that the Franklin people receive by doing these additional programs in-house.
Creativity, Steve Sherlock, right?
truly on the creative side. So yes, fire department restructured, police department restructured, but you've been doing this on a regular basis, saving
over $3 million in just in this year's budget.
Right.
And that's just with, there's a couple other more specialized, even more nuanced programs, but when we just kind of took a look at the brunt of it, over $3 million in savings. Mm-hmm. It was Miriam Goodman did the back of the envelope math and estimated around $50,000 in savings per child, and she was maybe off by 10 or 15 bucks. and so there are millions of dollars year over year. And what we're also, you know, seeing is within the budget, we're trying to add in two new positions for some of these specialized programs. About $100,000 cost,
which continues to add to the savings piece as well. Because if we didn't do that, it would cost us more to send them out of district.
Short-sighted.
Exactly.
That's right.
And that's what Dr. Griffith on the school committee, you know, called that out, and he said, "All right, well, let's talk. Like, how much money? You know, those two mm-hmm. positions." You know, how much money would they be able to save? It's about $200,000. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at, like, the return on investment, right. If you're in the private sector, that's a guarantee.
Right.
If you can go and you can drop $100,000 and then instantly save $200,000.
That's two for one, I mean.
But we need to be in the financial picture needs to be in a situation where we can actually afford to kind of go out and to spend a little bit extra in order to kind of keep those savings.
No disagreement with that, by all means, yeah. And then that can lead us into another piece, because some people are out there saying, well, why is it taking so long to redistrict? Well, the redistricting effort, if anything, kind of started with the one piece, Chloe Davis Thayer got closed. Another analysis was done, but then it was realized it was flawed because, yea, verily, it really didn't answer all the questions it needed to be answered. And in one piece in particular was, how much more of growth of these special ed programs, because that was one piece that was specifically let out of the facilities. So a room is a room, and you spend many years in the classroom. Mm-hmm. A room is a room, and in the old classroom days, 20, 25, that was okay. In the special ed classroom day, you're not going to fit 20, 25. In some of the special programs, it's only 4, 5, 6, depending. Right, so that reanalysis, and I know you've making a great effort this year with the comprehensive school facility planning process to really leverage from the prior ones. So you're not redoing them, you're just filling in the gaps, layering on the updated demographics, because, oh, by the way, the demographics were done before the 2020 census was released. So, okay, that can be updated. And now you're about to bring out in the next few weeks the updated report?
Yeah, and that's exactly right, because we went back to Jerry McKibben, who did that mm-hmm. that first demographics and population change to kind of just do an update. We went back to Castle Booze, so they could kind of fill in a couple of those extra spots, and mm-hmm. then we also have Dr. Fran Locker, and they're going to put a whole thing together to kind of do where the town's doing their master planning. We'll have the school master facility planning.
Right.
We could really take a look at what it's going to be over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that any one decision is going to be belabored that long, right. But just so that way we know, all right, we want to make what's going to happen in fall of 24, in fall of 25, fall of 26, and so that the whole community can kind of see if we're making this one change, it's to make us a bit more agile, and so that way we can jump to the next change and to the next change and to the right. next change, because we really are trying to push out a long-term visioning for the next 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's going to be a lot of information that's going to start to come out over the next couple of weeks. And there'll be some cost savings involved in that as well, because we are looking to just to try to be continually be
more
creative
efficient. Yeah.
And more efficient.
Right.
With the budget.
Right. And there may also be, and we won't speculate now, but there may also be some other significant expenses in there, because clearly we do still have some older schools in our buildings, you know? And at some point in time, depending upon Dr. Locker and everybody else's views in on that, oh, by the way, the community had opportunities to put their input into it. And I know one particular forum, as open to the community as it was, there was only, what, a dozen people showed? Come on, Franklin.
We will be continually having some more as well over the course of May,
mm-hmm.
Just to kind of continue to solicit more information. I know sometimes, too, it's a little bit easier to react to an idea than it is to kind of help participate in the problem solving. But.
Can I make one final point? Is I think just going back to the whole premise of One Franklin is that anyone who's lived here long enough to see the schools aren't the only ones in need. That's absolutely absurd. Mm-hmm. When you look at, I've interviewed people from the senior set, veterans, and the mental health needs, the wait lists for services are, you know, beyond,
right.
You know, whatever.
Right.
We've listened to, you know, the people from the library, police, fire, DPW.
Sure.
The town is in need of more funding mm-hmm. for services. It isn't just the schools.
No.
You know, we are One Franklin, and anybody who cares about our community wants to make sure that we're dealing with, we're looking out for One Franklin, that we're all in this together. We're not pitting one group against another. And I think people need to understand that, and especially I tend to view a lot from through the lens of mental health and wellness, but you look at the percentage, and we've talked about this before, the percentage of unhoused who are actually living with some form of mm-hmm. mental health issues.
Sure.
When you look at the percentage of people who are unhoused in the country, 1% of the people are diagnosed with schizophrenia. 20% of the homeless are. Those are the ones we hear them talk. They're living in the woods. Mm-hmm. They're living in their cars.
Sure.
And you don't think that there are a lot of needs in our community, that if we don't come together as a community and say, we don't have enough funding, and we better come together and find out how we're going, what we're going to do, and to say what the state has said is, you guys, you can come up with more funding. You got to care about your community. And the other thing, too, is I know there are people who talk about affordability and there are people on fixed incomes, and that's a valid point, and I get it, and I respect why people have that viewpoint. But all I think about, and Dave can speak to this clearly, how many emails I got from young families, I can't afford to pay to send my kid on, you know, for a bus. I can't pay for my three kids to play sports or have activities.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. There are those that are struggling in one way, but then don't we have to be creative and solve that problem?
Sure.
You know, but not pretend that, you know, to protect these people, we're going to let all these people go down the drain. How do we find creative ways to those who do struggle with paying bills? How do we help them, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we relieve the pressure on these families that can't afford to?
Right.
I get those emails. You must have, Dave, right?
No, I was just last week heard from a family yeah. with that exact thing, because when you look at it, they're when they look at like to play football, to do athletics, to do that, they know that they can't do that and they can't provide that for their
kids. There you go.
It adds up quickly.
And I know that there's always, oftentimes, you know, we have like the free and reduced lunch, which kind of also fell by the wayside with COVID, with the way that the state's kind of providing the
free lunch.
The free lunch, which is great, but it does mean there's a lot of families in need that maybe aren't kind of providing a lot of actually services. But there's also, you can kind of be below the poverty line, but you could also be just a little bit more.
Those are the ones we heard from.
And you're not.
Exactly. We're missing that. And then when those calls of anguish and to say, can you help me out? And, you know, and they didn't quite fit the poverty level, but they had three kids and they're trying to do all that. And you talk about people that affordability, you know, we've got to come up with a way to be more creative. That's right. All. You know?
Mm-hmm. You're saying that the lower middle class families in Franklin might not be able to afford to send the kids on the bus because they make a little bit too much money to be able to kind of provide, you know, fall below those lines, but too much to, you know, to kind of get the benefit, but not enough to actually be able to pay $1,100 per kid, the price of true cost of riding the bus, you know, if they got a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm.
It is a balancing act.
That's right. And the research tells us that there are kids who do not sign up because families can't afford it. And those kids are losing out. And we've got to look out for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find a way to deal with it all, because we are One Franklin. We really are, and we have to look out. This thing, if we start pitting one group against another and bashing the schools, and Steve, you said it so well, those teachers are killing themselves. And if they hear this stuff out there and they say, you know, okay, well, don't vote for it, but don't bash all the schools if that's what, you know, don't demean them when you, and particularly, and I'm going to just reinforce it one more time, and this is not unique to Franklin, but the level of emotional and mental health issues that these teachers are confronting, and you think you can teach kids that they're sitting there with their hands folded when they're dealing with trauma that we can't even imagine, and these teachers on the front line. So that's okay, don't fall for it, but don't misinformation, don't bash the schools, and don't say there aren't any mental health issues and that we're wasting money. Don't fall for it. We get it, you know, affordability, But speak, you know, with the facts and with, you know, but don't bash the schools. These guys, they're killing themselves, right, Dave?
They are. No, God bless every one of them that's doing it. And I think when you talk about, too, the mental health, that I know one of the things that I hear about quite frequently is they say, well, you know, you can kind of draw a line and you can see, you know, enrollment's declining. But the budget, the cost is going up. And, and they could look and say, like, well, you know, why is that? It doesn't seem like it makes sense to me.
Right.
But when you, if you look at what's going on in the classroom and what the schools are now obligated between, we've talked at length about all the continually added unfunded mandates that keep coming down from the states, but then from what the students are experiencing and going through, and that the community and the state has just decided that it's the school's responsibility to take care of these students that are going through so many different crises, that costs money. And so that you see that a rise, even though the enrollment has been declining, and now it is projected, we talked about the McKibben study, it is projected to start to kind of tick back up and to level out in the next couple of years, but the amount of social services that are having to go into each individual child has continually increased, and the number of students that are on IEPs, individual education plans, basically the cost per student has continually increased because the demands of each student has continually gone up despite enrollment ticking downward a little bit over the last couple of years.
And to reinforce that point, if, listener, you hadn't heard one of our prior episodes, we'll include some of those specifically where we went into details, but you can also look at this current school budget presentation where there was at least a page or maybe even three, if I recall correctly. So I think you had one for elementary, middle, and high school where, you know, we think of kind of the old school classroom with, you know, 20-something students and the teacher. That's not the classroom today. And the Lucas and the team were able to posit that for an elementary student, then this was required. And they listed all the different professionals who touched to support that student. And then went across to the middle school, even to the high school, the various scenarios, all of those are people, all those are resources, and some of those are higher resources than the average teacher salary, but it is required for the education. Hence, that's why the dollars and, the lines may look the wrong way, but when you start looking at the lines and those people who understand finance, who understand, you know, the process, and if anything, we just need to do better telling the story so that it all of a sudden they'll say, that's why.
That's it. Telling the story, getting the facts out. Really aggressively challenge the misinformation that's out there, you know, and just really reaching out to people to say, come together as a community and we'll all look out for each other, you know, the senior citizens, the veterans, our kids in schools, all of them need our attention, and we can do it.
Right.
We can be creative.
Indeed. Well, I think for now, this is a good break point. I'm sure we'll have another opportunity or two as this process continues in whatever way it goes. Yay or nay, there will be a vote. I'm sure if there is, then we'll have some more to talk about. We'll probably still have some talk about if there's not going to be a vote, because then there's going to be a whole lot of repercussions to begin to address in some way. So thank you both for taking time from your schedule today.
Steve, it's so important, you know, it's just really good to get the information out of you to take the time, and Dave also to include me in this conversation as well and giving me the chance to give a little bit of the history, because it's so important to me. I just, as like I say, a public school advocate, the birthplace of Horace Mann. We have to, right?
No, and I thank you both very much and for providing that historical context, you know, because this is something where chat about, you know, a little bit before, it's that frog in the water, you know, and the water's been getting hotter and hotter and hotter. But I think that if you, maybe you're new to the community, especially if you've just kind of come during COVID, when there's been so much federal dollars that have kind of been thrown to kind of silence this this problem, you know, maybe you weren't aware of all the cuts that have been made over the past 30 years. And so providing this that context was fantastic. Good. I really appreciate this so much. Yeah.
And we know even through the social, there were some folks who, you know, moved last year during the summer and expected to go to middle school and find the programs that they saw, and then they weren't there.
There you go.
Surprise. Let's try and avoid that this time. So thank you again. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. Contact information will be in the show notes. And we do this because Franklin matters.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.